Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature the top experts on all things tax to help you understand, navigate, and resolve all your tax-related issues.
Hi, I'm Alan Rolnick. I'm the host of the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where I feature top leaders who help people with important life events, such as setting up your financial plan, providing an education to you, for your children, immigration settling, providing insurance to protect your family and your property, going through a divorce, having health issues, losing a job, and if you have problems with your sales and marketing. So these are the kind of people that, these are the people that I have interviewed in the past, and some of them are, you know, are big names in their field, in their fields. I have Jeffrey Schneider, who was on before, Eric Cohen, Adrian Miller, Sylvie Heyman, and Evan Raven. This episode is brought to you by Tri-State Tax Resolution. People call me when they get a letter from the Internal Revenue Service or the state tax department. They get a letter that says you have unfiled tax returns or you owe us money and we are going to seize your assets, levy your wages, and possibly sell your children and your mother-in-law. But, you know, I'm here to help prevent all of that. If you get a letter from the Internal Revenue Service or New York State Department of Taxation or New Jersey Department of Finance, don't panic. Just pick up the phone, give me a call, and I will take it from there. I will do all the heavy lifting for you, fix the problem permanently, and you'll never have to speak to an IRS agent or a state revenue agent again. You'll be able to sleep at night and not wonder when the tax man is coming. Again, give me a call at 718-841-7317 or visit my website at www.tristatetaxresolution.com. When you call, you'll also be able to download a free three-step guide to getting rid of the Internal Revenue Service. I have with me today Robert Hernandez. Robert, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good. And I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to do this.
Of course. Always a pleasure to be with you and your guests and your guests, your participants. Yep.
Thank you. Robert is a certified planner and current chair of the Financial Planning Association, Metro New York chapter. He was born and raised in Brooklyn. Now lives in Queens. Robert got into financial planning after working several gigs in corporate finance and big four consulting, and decided not to follow the career in the big corporate world because of what just didn't fit his style. Okay, Robert. So tell me now, why did you get into financial planning?
Well, I think it's very similar to what you were just talking about before. You know, when people get into trouble, oftentimes they need help, they need guidance, they need advice. And hopefully, you know, before people fall into tax problems with the IRS, if they can actually do a certain amount of planning and preparation and kind of like understanding what the pitfalls are, be better served to know how to avoid having to deal with the IRS itself. So in terms of financial planning, I think part of it was kind of like walking away from the big corporate lifestyle and wanting to do something for myself, for my family. And as I was progressing through, working through large corporations, large banks, I said to myself, you know, the return on my lifestyle, my return on my health, and even return on my income, you know, it was all going to become kind of like a, there were some, I would say some limits to it, you know. I think how I'd summarize it is like, you have to keep moving onwards and upwards. And if you don't feel like, you know, you're gonna, you know, be successful, then you just got to move on and just keep moving on, you know, until you find the right spot.
Right. When you say you're consulting for the big four, you talk about the big four accounting firms?
Yeah, it was actually Ernst & Young.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Ernst & Young and the Big Four, they're generally structured in like two big arms. One is like an audit arm, right? So they provide audit and insurance experience, you know, army of CPAs. And on the other side, it's consulting, business consulting. So we have we had a good practice that was very similar to like McKinsey. And we focus on consulting with, I guess my practice was focused on regulatory changes for large banking institutions. So that's kind of like where my sweet spot was in my former career.
So you were dealing with high net worth people at that particular point in time?
Well, not actually people. It was actually very large companies. And, you know, they needed basically helping them go through large transformation or change programs.
Right.
So got to, you know, learn a lot. I think ultimately, you know, helping other, you know, large companies. Okay, it is what it is. It pays really well. But you know, it's also very taxing, you know, ultimately it's a question like, what am I doing? What am I creating in this world for myself and for my fellow humans?
Who are you really?
What is the legacy that I'm really leaving? You know? And
Who are you really helping? I got down to.
Yeah, ultimately, right? So I mean, that was the genesis of transitioning to financial planning. I mean, it was a big transition in the sense of, I knew a number of people in the industry, you know, sat with them a little bit. It wasn't something that happened in a dime. It was actually, it took a lot of time and work to work, you know, to work through that. I would say it was about a 5-year transition in a way. Yeah.
Well, and that's part of the reason I got out of the traditional accounting practice, because in reality, I wasn't helping anybody.
Yeah. You
know, I was just putting numbers in a box on an IRS form. And, you know, because these people only would come to you once a year. And, you know, by the time they got to you, there's very little you could do, you know, except record the history that happened. And, yeah, you could do a little tweaking here and there, but we're not really helping anybody. And so I got into the tax resolution area. And there I can actually help somebody because, you know, they get the letter or something happens and they find that they're behind in their filings. So help bring them back into compliance. That's the first thing. And the second thing is to negotiate a settlement with the government and hopefully saving them some dollars at that point. So at that point, I feel like I really did something to, you know, improve somebody's life. That's how I got into the resolution business. Interesting question I have for you. I think it's interesting. You were born in Brooklyn. You were raised in Brooklyn. Where in Brooklyn?
Well, I actually grew up in, are you familiar with Star City?
So yes. This is I'm a Brooklyn boy. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So wedged between like East New York and I guess Canarsie.
Right.
Is a little, right, like very middle class kind of condo property that was established. It's very similar to like the first suburbs that were put out in Long Island, like Midtown, for example. Like it, but this was done in Brooklyn, where there's, you know, several building complex to make sure that like housing was like affordable. And you know, my parents actually still out there. They live in Flatlands. They're just outside of of Starrett City.
Know the area. Yeah.
Yeah. Over on Cozine, that area. And they've kind of built, you know, I don't know if you've been back there recently, but behind there's a whole new shopping mall that they built on top of closer to the highway.
Right.
So I think it's called the exit now is Airskin on the Belt Parkway.
Right. And, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. That exit was not originally there.
No, there. It's they added it for the mall.
When they put the project up.
Yeah.
It was years later that they did that.
But,
I was from the Bensonhurst section. So I grew up there until I got married and then I moved to Queens.
Yeah, we're truly New Yorkers, you know.
Yeah. my entire life.
And, you know, going back to the past, that other question, I think that was part of like, you know, why I kind of like was very skeptical and cynical about kind of corporate life after, you know, I would say like it took a little time. It kind of dawned on me because I was like making good money. I was like, ultimately, it's like, where's this money going to get? It wasn't enough. Like, it wasn't like enough that I could really like quickly earn a couple of million and exit, you know? So Yeah. So it was really trading time for money, right? And that's ultimately like bottom line. I came to reality with and said, you know, that if that's going to be the case, then I'd rather work on for myself. That's how I got into financial planning.
Actually, I started out in the corporate world, and I just couldn't deal with the bullshit. You know, and just it was just
yeah, it's soul sucking, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I just couldn't deal with it. Yeah. So I went back to school, got my master's degree in accounting, then got to see my CPA, and worked for a few number of people, you know, over the years until I finally mm-hmm. decided to go out on my own, and that's where I'm at. And, you know, and as the years went by, I sort of transitioned from the traditional services to what I'm doing now, mm-hmm. which is the tax resolution part.
Which is important, which is very important. I mean, you're a defender, you know, of people, you know, which is very important.
Just, you know, there are rules to do tax returns and there are rules to settle the bill.
Yeah.
And you have to know the rules to settle, you know, to negotiate with. And because, I mean, the average person, the IRS will take they'll take advantage of them. You know, because the average person doesn't know the questions to ask, doesn't know what the filing, you know, periods are for certain things.
Right. Procedures to step through in order to have even a communication or a conversation with the IRS.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you help people save money on taxes. How do you do that?
Well, there are kind of a couple of different ways. I mean, as a financial planner, I help many my families, and I focus on middle class families. In fact, my sweet spot is working with small business owners, those that have established, you know, small businesses and or medium sized business owners. I've actually kind of carved out a niche with also self employed, kind of like gig economy workers, those that would, I would say, like, you know, you would commonly find like a WeWork type situation.
Right.
And what's interesting about that is that, you know, financial planning, just like tax planning, you know, is about, you know, understanding the rules, but really about being organized, right? So one of the first steps in financial planning is having a conversation with our clients and, you know, with middle-class families, sit down. It's very much a kitchen table conversation. And they're usually coming to you with like a money issue that they're not clear how to jump through. Oftentimes the clarity is that, you know, it's a future wish or future vision or future expectation. And two things will kind of like usually come out. One is they're not clear, like how to visualize that future expectation, right? And then what are the steps to get there? And the challenge with the steps part is that oftentimes, although people, you know, oftentimes finally people are not as financially literate as they could be or should be. About financial products, about financial planning, or how to get organized to make things easier. So, we sit down and have kind of like, you know, just a conversation around those challenges. And if we take an example, you know, let's say, you know, a gig economy worker, and they're looking at their income, they're usually cash flow rich, but like asset poor per se, right? Meaning that, you know, they've got an established business, they've got money coming in, they want to reinvest it, you know, into their company, you know, generally because they want to continue to grow the company. But they also have to realize that they can't wait to save either, right? Because there is the principle of start early in financial planning that's really important. I mean, why start early is because you want, you know, money to compound and start to work for you over time. Now, it does take some diligence and some discipline in order to build that, you know, that bit of a nest egg in order for the compounding to really start working for you, but you got to start somewhere. So, you know, that's part of the education with these small business owners is first saying, okay, I know you want to take 100% of like your profits and cash flow and put it back into the business, but you got to start thinking about also putting some money away. And so that's where, you know, I work with these business owners to look at some tax smart saving strategies. So for them, it could be, you know, it could be as simple as helping put together like a SEP IRA. So that's a self-employment IRA that's good for mm-hmm. business owners. And that's a, you know, that's an easy traditional way, very similar to like a corporate 401k, where you can get tax savings on the front end on money that's contributed to the IRA, and start to build that nest egg, right? One thing I like to do with those small business owners is actually do a kind of a dual strategy. One is have a SEP IRA, but also a Roth IRA. And the reason for that is that, you know, one of the, you know, as you know, Alan, from a tax planning perspective, a lot of these types of, you know, new economy workers, you know, try to adjust their income for, you know, for tax purposes. So what's, right. you know, ultimately, what is the AGI that they're filling out on their, you know, the 1040 right. and their Schedule C. And so you can actually play with that in a way to get, you know, max, you know, the max contribution into your, you know, SEP IRA that, you know, based on your cash flow.
Right.
But then, you know, that shouldn't be necessarily the end of savings. You know, with a Roth IRA, then you can also like put money in, because you have a lower, you know, tax rate, you can then actually put money in Roth IRA that also has additional tax benefits of, you know, reflects the fact that you're recording today a low AGI, mm-hmm. but then the money that you're saving grows,
right.
Earnings and interest free when you take it out later on, yeah, towards retirement. So, you know, that conversation right there, when I have that conversation with small business owners, they're not fully aware of that. You know, that's a classic strategy, but it's, you know, they didn't have that available to them from a knowledge or financial literacy perspective. So, you know, so that's a, you know, an example of like, you know, a quick tax saving tip. Yeah.
Right. Do you ever encourage a small business, a self-employed person to do a 401k?
I have. And that's usually the case when it depends on the type of business that they have and are looking to grow. You know, while 401k can be very beneficial from a tax savings perspective, it can be somewhat costly for a small business owner to implement. And it's not just the cost of the plan itself, it's really the administration right. headache that's usually the biggest part. So for a small business, usually when you start to have more than 10 employees, and I would say more on the, you know, 20 employee side, then a 401k could start to make sense. One thing that you could do is like have a solo 401k, which is another way, you know, it's comparable to a SEP IRA where you could get, you know, a higher ability to save money, right. you know, without necessarily running into plan constraints.
Right.
Cause there's certain like, you know, ceilings, you know, you can max out on how much you can actually contribute.
Right. I think the 401k ceiling is lower.
Yeah. So that, you know, that could work. But yeah, I mean, I also say, you know, try to keep it simple. So usually like, you know, a solo 401k or maybe a SEP IRA might, you know, could do the trick for a small business owner.
Do you ever interface with their accountants when you're doing this?
So that's ultimately one of a space that we want to get in, is have a conversation with their accountants, because you want to have coordination, and that's super important. So if you think about the workflow or the process that a business owner is going through, they'll try to close the books on a particular period for a business owner. And then, you know, they shovel off basically, or have the accountant run, you know, finalize the books. And before they get there, the accountant will, you know, see if there are any kind of like planning opportunities. The challenge there is that the accountant may not necessarily think about it from a business owner wealth perspective. They might be more focused on just tying out the books and getting it reconciled and getting it all neat and perfect. They might not necessarily, you know, actually try to think proactively about some of the planning opportunities. And so, you know, having a conversation, you know, sitting down at the table and talking about their, you know, the business owner's financial plan for the long term can help remind the accountant, okay, when they're kind of working through the books, you know, there may be one or two things that they need to keep in mind in order to make sure that, you know, the books and records of the business will then generate kind of like the right type of wealth that or, you know, that will be coordinated with the type of wealth plan that they, that the Minnesota 100 has in place. It may not be limited just to, you know, just savings in like a 401k or a Roth IRA, but when you start to get to a little bit more advanced planning techniques around trusts, life insurance for the business owner, the family, and things like that, that that's where it's become super important to actually stay coordinated with the accountant as well.
Okay, and then you do you refer them when you get to the point where they're able to do a trust or it makes sense to do a trust, you get them the attorney to do that, or they have to find their own attorney?
Well, I will, yeah, as part, it depends on where they start. So if they have an attorney, that's great. I'll work with them and hopefully they'll work with me. You know, it's just a business professional relationship.
Right.
Ultimately, it just takes over time. You develop, you know, deeper professional relationship that comes into, you know, more of a,
right,
a friendship in a sense that, you know, create like referrals in a sense, but, or no, like trust, put it that way, not necessarily referrals.
Right.
But if like, if I see that a business owner doesn't have, you know, a proper estate planning attorney, you know, I work with a couple that are very good. You know, one based in Queens, one based in Brooklyn. They're very good, in just basically help them to, have that conversation. And in those conversations and introductions, you know, I'll sit down and say, hey, you know, X, Y, and Z estate planner, you know, this is, you know, what, you know, let me introduce you to business owner Alan Rolnick, for example. And, you know, we, you know, as a financial planner, I'm very, you know, very, I take my responsibility to making sure that, you know, he's protected, in all aspects of his financial life. And, you know, these are some of the things that I'm seeing in his plan. You know, what are some opportunities you think, or what, you know, that in terms of trust work you think might be appropriate in terms of the goals that, you know, Alan is trying to achieve. And, you know, that's where it just opens up the conversation. It might take, you know, some time to work through it because, you know, answers don't necessarily pop up quickly. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The critical thing in our field, Alan, I think you appreciate this, is he's got to see numbers on paper.
Right? Yeah.
I think all too often, I wouldn't call them financial planners, but financial advisors that are not really doing financial planning, they're mostly doing like product sales. You know, they don't really put numbers in front of their clients per se. They're just trying to get the sale. They'll, you know, kind of,
right,
you know, talk about the benefits and features and you know, the wonderful things that's, you know, you can do with a certain product, but you know, they don't actually go through the planning. They're not necessarily integrating it comprehensively, thinking about it comprehensively, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where, you know, sitting down with an estate planner and someone like yourself, Alan, and going through the numbers, you know, working out like, you know, the information, it becomes important, and the conversation is important. It turns into a very rich conversation. About, you know, tax strategies, about,
right,
the estate planning,
right,
and I actually geek out on that stuff myself, you know. And hence why I became a financial planner. You know, if it's something that I've got passionate about and can geek out on, yeah, hey, let's do it.
Yeah. Do you ever find out when you're talking to your prospective clients whether they filed all their tax returns?
Sorry, repeat that again. If they
do you ever, in talking to your prospective clients, do you ever ask the question whether they filed all their tax returns?
Whether they filed all their tax returns. For example, I will ask them for, if it's a new client, I will usually ask them for 2 to 3 years of like their past tax forms just to step through it. I call it a 1040 step through. And it's not just the federal, but also the state.
Right, right.
But I do, because, you know, there are wonderful planning opportunities that, you know, can be had just by walking through the 1040.
Okay.
And I will actually ask for that annually, because then I can compare the 1040s and see what's kind of like changed over time. And, you know, and make sure that my understanding of what's happening to the client and the, you know, kind of their business and their, you know, their wealth connects with, you know, what their tax forms are saying. So it's kind of a double check on the accountancy work, but also the changes can highlight some other planning opportunities that might come up, like, you know, trying to take advantage of additional deductions or trying to do things above the line on the credits. And, you know, some of the more mundane things that might come up just by changes of address, you know, it starts to kick off a question about like how, you know, the house or change of last name, you know, or something like that.
Right.
Change in filing status, even something as simple as that. It's so, yeah. So it's, you know, part of my workflow of, you know, of a to-do that in a conversation I'll have annually with the client as well.
If I can make a suggestion, you might want to, not that you need it, because you, you know, you to do your work, you don't need it. But to be in compliance with the government, they need the last 6 years' tax returns filed.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. I mean,
so, you know, it's just a question to make sure that they've done that, because somewhere down the road and the government's getting tighter with the enforcement. Somewhere down the road, that letter is going to come and say you haven't filed your 2014 tax return. We don't have a copy of it. No. Where is it?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Jenna, it's a fair point. I don't think I've asked specifically for 6 years, but I do know that generally the clients have filed the 1040 because they're usually like seeking the, you know, the income, the tax check at, you know, by April as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I know.
People don't want to forget that.
But you can't.
I guess what people forget is when they owe the IRS money. So.
You can't always do it by April 15th. That's why God invented extensions.
Yeah, totally.
Sure. But, you know, we generally, I think most accounts try to get it done by the 15th of April. Mm. But, you know, sometimes you just can't. Questions come up
I mean, this year has been an interesting year, and it exposed a lot of like challenges in small business accountants with the CARES Act package and the PPP loan and the EIDL, payment support. You know, the PPP, there was a mad scramble to have your books, you know, properly, you know, set up so that you can file for the information. And make sure you have the right data on your workers and how much income you're pulling in order to.
It was more important to get the payroll correct than to actually get the books, you know, correct at that particular time.
Yeah, and the sad thing I will tell you is that, you know, whether it's a smaller accountant got inundated with requests. There were a couple of my clients found, they came to me and said, I need to change my clients because my accountant, because of my bookkeeper, because they are not responding to my requests. And they kind of like basically disappeared on them. I wanted to read them the riot app, but I don't know those accountants. So, but I quickly helped them, you know, with a couple of accountants I did, you know, could refer them to, but, you know, trying to then change accountants and getting, you know, the books and records can be a challenge on the fly. So
especially that at this time of
absolutely
in this period of time, you know, because we were all inundated with that stuff.
So that's why it's important to have a system in place, like using QuickBooks or whatever kind of accounting software, keeping copies of like your past year financial closes and your past year data and backup of the data is super important. I mean, that's business continuity at its most basic.
Absolutely. You just gotta keep them. And they also should know that they should keep their records for at least 6 years.
Yeah.
So, and stuff that the capital improvements, well, that you got to keep a little longer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you sell the asset, you got to know what you paid for it, you know, what your basis is.
Yep.
So, all right, one last question. So if you were going to be given a Life Achievement Award, who would you thank?
Wow, that is a great question. Lifetime Achievement Award. You know, I would say, besides my mother?
Besides your family.
Besides my mother?
Yeah.
That's a very good question.
I mean, who helped you? Who helped you get to where you are? Maybe nobody did.
No, there's too many to thank. You know, there's like a little bit of an ensemble kind of a thing. You know, they've come in, you know, periods of your life and stuff like that. I would say, you know, who is someone who inspires me? There's a lot of people that kind of inspire me, but you know, I would say. You know, I would say start out with like, let's pick someone from the entrepreneur world. Let's say like Robert Kiyosaki. And the reason why I would pick him is because he kind of like is set the seminal tone about around rich man, poor man, mm-hmm. right? And Rich Dad, Poor Dad, excuse me, that's the name right. of the book. And that's like a classic entrepreneur book, but it's beyond that in the sense of it's a mindset book. Like it's right. one of the classics that when I read it, clearly kind of cement, you know, sent me on my journey. It kind of reconfirmed, like, you know, hey, you know, I was thinking something along those lines as well, and he's put it into words in such a way and so profound and very, you know, in a very accessible way that it gave me a lot of comfort and heart. You know, now I hopefully it's not cliche. I think a lot of people, because of like the way that, you know, the gig economy has grown so much these days, it could be cliche to kind of refer back to that book. But I mean, I'd like to acknowledge him for having written it and shared with us that, you know, that concept and the messaging right. in the book, right. because it set a lot of entrepreneurs and business builders in the right direction. And I think that's very important.
Okay. So Robert, I want to thank you for taking your time.
And Alan, it was a pleasure.
I appreciate
a lot of fun.
I really appreciate you doing this interview. And I hope somewhere down the road we can do this again.
Yeah, I wish you all the best, and wish you all the safety and sanity.
You too. Thank you for joining us on the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, and we will see you the next time. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Be sure to click subscribe to get updates on our latest episodes.